Blue Hen Sports Cage on 91.3 WVUD. Teddy Gelman alongside Jake Lampert. Jake, what's going on in sports?
So we are in the midst of a lot of heat going on between the Detroit Tigers and New York Yankees as the bench is clear for the third time in one game. After Todd Frazier was hit in the head, Miguel Cabrera had a very bad call at the plate, and he started tackling the Yankees catcher. So that's on the baseball side. Football side, we are getting into full swing for preseason. Predictions are coming out, stats are coming out, and the numbers are starting to make sense here, and we'll get to a lot of other things during the show today.
Ahmed Quadri sat down with Deontay Cherry, wide receiver for Delaware football. We'll be talking to him later on in the show, and we are going to preview Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. That fight is on Saturday. All to come here on The Cage, 91.3 WVUD. And in the spirit of Delaware football, it's time to get into some discussion. Ahmed, you had a chance to sit down with Deontay Cherry the other day after practice. I'll let you give a brief detailed synopsis of what went on there, and then we'll give it a listen.
Yeah, a little bit shorter than I expected. They were having a little scrimmage slash walkthrough for it, so it was more or less a kind of a post-game interview there, so didn't really get to sit down with him, but had a few minutes to talk to him, and very genuine, cool interview, cool guy, so just kind of hear what he has to say, and then Jake, I want to get your thoughts also, and maybe if you guys have any questions, we'll go over that with just a week left before the first game.
All right, here's Ahmed Quadri sitting down the other day with Delaware football wide receiver Deontay Cherry.
Deontay, I just want to start off. First question is, how do you feel right now after that little scrimmage, mentally, physically? Where are you at right now with just about a week, just over a week left till the first game?
Physically, I feel good. I mean, I feel as good as you can after 3 weeks of camp, but, you know, I feel good. Mentally, I feel real good. I feel motivated going into the season. Just after these weeks, just playing with these guys and seeing how much progress we made, I feel real motivated.
So the guy throwing to you is kind of important. You've caught a ball from a few guys now. How do you feel about just Joe Walker coming into the season now?
He's a great dude, great quarterback, made progress. Receivers trust him, line trust him, team trust him. He has all my trust, though.
You guys also have some solid guys backing him up as of right now. J.P. Caruso, any thoughts on him moving forward as well?
Same thing for all of them. We all trust him.
All right, so you're obviously number one wide receiver right now, the kind of the go-to option. You guys have some younger guys, some older guys, a nice mix of wide receivers. They can kind of dictate your success and, you know, your demise on the field. How do you feel about that unit and your receiving crews, your brothers on that side of the field?
It's a very talented unit. One of the most talented that I played with since I've been here. We all push each other. We've been pushing each other all summer, all camp. And it's like we're pushing each other to the point where somebody comes out. If I come out, next guy comes in, we don't miss a beat. So I feel good about the group right now.
Just in a sentence each, your personal expectations for the season and your team's expectations for the season.
Both the same. CAA champs and national
champs. Yeah, all right. I like that. Just got a couple more questions for you here. Going into week two here, Virginia Tech, FBS powerhouse. You guys played FBS powerhouse before. That's a 67,000 seat stadium. Are you looking forward to that at all, or is this just another game? Nervous at all? Just thoughts going into week two there.
I mean, it's a great stadium, so yeah. I don't think it's going to be just another game. We're definitely going to be motivated for that. But that man just like us, so.
Kind of post college right here. What are your post-NFL or college thoughts, really going to NFL, or as far as education goes, master's degree, bachelor's, doctorate, whatever it may be?
I'm going to graduate in the fall.
Okay,
in December.
Nice.
And then after that, probably just train to see for the next level at the NFL.
All right, nice. So speaking of the NFL, I think the people really want to know your model or who do you model your game after, or who do you idolize in the NFL?
It's a couple different people.
Okay.
Odell, the receiver.
Okay.
Antonio Brown, just a lot of the little small receivers, quick, shifty receivers.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's going to do it all for today. And if I don't get to talk to you again, good luck in the rest of the season. Good luck first game.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Small interview, nothing too crazy, but just a good kind of player profile just to get in his head a little bit and see what he's really thinking. I thought he gave some genuine answers. Again, it was short. I wish it was a longer conversation, but just kind of wanted to see where he was at in the present moment. And I think a lot of players kind of will give you, you know, a PR answer or kind of what you want to hear, but I think he was, you know, feeling very good and feeling very confident, and I think his expectations were real, and I think his team's expectations were real, and I think his confidence level is where it's always been, and I think it's at an all-time high right now.
You said it was kind of a walkthrough type game.
Yeah.
What did he do, if anything, in that game that was, I guess, noteworthy? Were there any route running, pass catching,
right.
anything
mm-hmm.
stood out for him?
So, again, not really like a full game, but a lot of scenarios, I think, is the best way to put it. So it's kind of one of those things, you're at the 40-yard line, you get stopped, and you think you're going to punt it, and they're like, nope, we're going to bring the field goal unit in. So, you know, last second, coach will call out a play, kind of, you know, catch your athletes off guard there, and then they're going to try and hit like a 56-yarder, and that's just something that they did. And again, for Cherry specifically, put in a couple of different guys, put in, Pat Keogh or projected starter, and whoever it is, I think he actually caught balls from all three, first string, second string, and third string quarterbacks, just to kind of get a feel for that. So Joe Walker specifically, that's who I meant. I couldn't get the name out there. But again, just nothing crazy specific, just routes here and there, goal line situations, you know, fourth and one type situations. They even did a fake field goal, and I think the holder kind of scurried out and kind of threw a quick touchdown. It was like I think it was an extra point, maybe even whatever it was. But they had a few different scenarios, which I thought were really cool. And again, Cherry specifically, just looking good out there. He's the number one guy. So kind of what they got what they expected out of him for that walkthrough / scrimmage.
So starting the season for Delaware, week from today? Yep, week from today.
1 week exactly.
1 week exactly. Probably an hour and 20 minutes away.
Yep.
We'll have you and Brandon down at the stadium doing the game, Delaware against Del State. Now, the schedule does not get easier as they go to Virginia Tech. The game after that, I'll be on the call and Brandon for that game, and then we go to Cornell. What is the team prepping for? You know Del State's going to be a competitive game like it's been all the years. Last year was a fairly competitive game, and then you go to Virginia Tech, which is a very good football program. Is there a different sense of training going on with the team? Is there more of like a, all right, we're going to be prepared to go yard, throw the ball downfield, 30, 40-yard passes? Or is it kind of like what they were last year? We're just going to run the ball, ground and pound, and try and put some points on the board.
Well, I mean, you heard it from him specifically that, you know, Virginia Tech is, everybody likes to say it's just another game, but he said it's not another game. You go in with a different mentality and kind of go all in, all chips all in the table for that one. So it's going to be a little different. You'll notice it and you'll feel it in Virginia Tech. I know Brandon's also there. But talking about the first game specifically, I don't think Delaware State gets the love they deserve. I know it's the, you know, Battle of Delaware, and you said it was competitive. It was competitive for a little bit, but it's just one of those things that you kind of know what the outcome will be, and I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but I think everyone is expecting a University of Delaware win against Delaware State. We'll see how that goes, but that it's weird because the hype is there because it's the first game of the season. But, I mean, as far as, like, training goes and practice goes, it's not a walk in the park, but Delaware knows what they have to do against Delaware State. It's pretty straightforward. Everything's laid out there for them. So, again, I hate to say it, but you kind of want to go into, you know, week two there and get Virginia Tech in the books and see what you can do there. We were kind of talking about different quarterback scenarios. Maybe we'll see two quarterbacks, maybe three quarterbacks in the season, maybe even, but and splitting reps and all that. We'll see how that goes, but I think it would be great for Delaware to get that first win in the books and get that second game out of the way and, you know, kind of set the tone for the rest of the season, because week three, I don't want to say it's when it starts, but that's when you really start going, and that's when you start having to start making moves for the rest of the year and just really, you know, dictate the pace from now on.
So most situations in a just kind of a walk-around practice, like we've talked about, a lot of players get to see the field.
Right.
So looking at the wide receiver position,
everyone, I think, saw the field there.
I know you're mentioning that Chariots, and he is the number one wide receiver and probably the top target for Joe Walker.
Yep.
If not him, it's Charles Scarf at the tight end position.
Mm-hmm.
After Cherry, I mean, you have Jamie Jarman probably going to be lining up on the other side of him, Vinny Papale. Who else do you see kind of complementing Cherry? Do you see anyone kind of pulling defenses away from him, pulling mm-hmm. routes away from him? Who else is kind of going to step up and take a role here on the Delaware offense?
I'll just say, you said Scarf. I'll one-up you on that one. I'll say the whole tight end receiving crew. So I think the tight end crew, those two, three guys are going to be huge for not only Cherry, but it's also going to be huge for whatever quarterback's, you know, in there. I think that kind of will open up the game for him. And again, I asked him, I was like, you know, how do you feel about, you know, your receivers in general? Because they can, you know, help him be successful, or they can kind of lock things up for him and not get him very many looks. But I think if the team in general and the tight ends specifically are successful, that's going to get him his looks. And again, Cherry, a slot receiver, he likes getting inside. The tight ends also, they're very good on playing, you know, outside or inside. So that's going to open up the field for Cherry. Again, small guy, can really get anywhere he wants, and a very speedy guy as well. So we'll see how all that goes. I think the tight ends are going to be huge for the rest of the wide receivers and whatever quarterback just happens to be under center.
And you mentioned any quarterback that happens to be under center. They said they're going to be, like you said, splitting reps the mm-hmm. first game, maybe even the second game. Just thinking about that team-wise, it's going to be difficult for a team to adjust every set of downs, every quarter, to get a new quarterback coming out. Is there anything that you see different from the quarterbacks that would kind of complement the team? Anything that maybe Walker does differently that would help the other, whatever line he's on? Is there anything that can make changing quarterbacks maybe a benefit for not just the coaches seeing which quarterback's better, but the wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs?
I mean, it's kind of like in a lot of sports, you know, you're feeding the hot hand. And I think with this, you know, I don't know if the coach will have a quick leash or not. I don't know exactly what his game plan is and who is under center at that time. But again, it's one of those things that we've seen previous coaches in the past try this, as far as, you know, Delaware Blue Hens are concerned. But why wait, you know, week three, week four, conference play starts? I kind of like it. You know, first game of the season, try it out. Why wait? You know, get a good rhythm going. Again, if there's a star quarterback and someone rises to the occasion, you know, let's make it very clear that they're not going to be splitting reps. There's going to be one guy under center, and he's going to be the one, you know, with the keys to the car. So that's what's going to happen. It's the keys to the team, and that's exactly what's going to happen. It's not going to be that, you know, teetering back and forth all season. So I like it starting week one and kind of just getting all the question marks taken care of.
In all honesty, here's my thought process with this. Coach Rocco has now had since December to evaluate Joe Walker in film, in the spring game, in the summer. How much has he had for J.P. Caruso ever since he knew he was coming in, which was end of May, sometime around then? The fact that he has not selected a quarterback as the starter, to me, is concerning, because it tells you one of several things. And I think the biggest thing is that it tells you that we don't have the confidence to say that this guy is going to guide us along. And very, very, very rarely do you say, you know what, we're going to choose two quarterbacks because they're both really good, and we want to have them both do stuff. If they're both really good, and Joe Walker can run, for example, then if they're both really good, then you'd use Joe Walker somewhere else, but you'd have one quarterback. This doesn't happen. Whenever you do go back and forth, typically, it's because you're not confident with what you have. So I get that you want to feel it out, and you want to see what's happening, but I mean, he's at a while to evaluate this team, and I don't know if he's seen what he's wanted to see. From everything we've heard, there's been struggling from both guys out there on the field. None of them has lurched forward and taken hold of the quarterback position. I still think there's room to grow here, but in my mind, the fact that you have to say off the bat they're both going to get time is kind of concerning, because both getting time is something you do in preseason and something you do earlier on. I think from a team confidence perspective, it would be very helpful to have one who is your QB, because you mentioned it amid, when one guy comes out and the next down somebody else comes in, you're changing everything. There's so many differences. So I think that part of it confuses and maybe concerns me a little bit, but I'll trust Rocco on it. Maybe he sees something we don't.
I think winning cures all, and if they can get, you know, 3-4 wins, maybe first five games, I think that there will be a lot of clarity there. And again, like I've said, if somebody rises to the occasion, there will be no splitting reps. There's going to be a clear-cut guy under center, and I think that's eventually what's going to happen.
Women's soccer is actually the first team that is underway. They lost their first match a couple days ago, but they'll be going off tonight at home against number 11 Georgetown, and this will be a 1-1 Georgetown team, and the Blue Hens women's soccer team will be looking for their first ever win versus a ranked opponent, 0-1 on the season, and we'll keep an eye on this one as we move through. So the women's soccer team underway completely, and then the men's soccer team shortly behind them. They have their opening match coming up on Monday against Bryant. That's a 7 o'clock start at home. Monday against Bryant, Thursday against Temple. That's a 2 o'clock, so you can watch that one at 2 and then tune into the show here at 5 o'clock before we have our football coverage at 7 o'clock. And the other team we want to keep an eye on as we move into the start of this season is field hockey. The defending national champions came out in the overall poll this season. The Blue Hens were selected as a top team, and they're expected to be there again at number 3. That is where they came out in this national poll, and it was their highest ever ranking in the National Field Hockey Division I preseason poll. North Carolina earned the number 1 spot. The Blue Hens beat them in the national championship, but North Carolina is going to get number 1, and Connecticut is going to be in there as well. So that's the top polling for field hockey, and when we look at their schedule, they're coming up very shortly. We are going to have coverage of their first home game next Friday, but before that, they are going to have their very first game on the previous day against Louisville. They're going to play Indiana and Louisville on the road. It just happens to be back-to-back games. Indiana set on this Saturday is their opening game. It happens to be in Louisville. Indiana on Saturday, Louisville on Sunday. Louisville's number 9 in the poll. And then the Blue Hens open up their home schedule on Friday against Dartmouth at home. And once again, the Blue Hens number 3 team overall. That coverage for you will be a week from tomorrow, 7 o'clock, right here as Delaware opens up their home schedule. And we will have all home field hockey games for you this season. I know that was a mouthful, but Delaware Athletics coming into focus very quickly now, a week from today, the first football game.
You're listening to the Blue Hen Sports Cage podcast.
Kyrie Irving moving from Cleveland to Boston. Isaiah Thomas going over to Cleveland. So you got those two players swapped. A draft pick also going to Cleveland, and then a couple other role players, Jay Crowder and one other. Remind me of who that is, Jake, off the top of your head. We'll have to do a check here. But a player.
Right. Ante Zizic was the player. He's a center, I believe. Fairly new to the league, if I'm correct. Not a gigantic bargaining piece in basketball sense. He could be a prospect. I think the main goal of getting him is just try to develop him into something that can play at least.
So that's the trade here, Cleveland and Boston. Now, Amid, in the studio at this very moment, you did a podcast with Brandon a couple days ago. It would have been Tuesday night at this point, where you talked about your first reactions. We do want people to kind of go to that to get that first reactions. We'll do a little bit more outlook on this trade and what may happen. But first of all, welcome to the studio. Second of all, give a little synopsis of what you talked about during that podcast with Brandon and what your original impression was for this trade.
Well, I mean, I think we can all agree that the offseason has been way better than the actual regular season. But there was a lot going on, but very simply, I think it was a good trade for both teams. You could look at all the extra pieces aside. It was Kyrie Irving for Isaiah Thomas. I mean, both teams felt like they kind of needed something new, needed something fresh. Obviously, Kyrie Irving needed a change of scenery, and there was speculation. I don't like to speculate, but that things got kind of stale with Isaiah Thomas and his team, the Boston Celtics. So, again, change of scenery for both guys, both teams. I think that nothing that much changes. Me, personally, I think the Celtics got a little bit of a better bargain. Big picture, I know they lost some key defensive pieces collectively as far as Jay Crowder and also Avery Bradley left earlier as well. So we'll see how that plays into the big picture of everything. Cavs, still the favorites out of the East. But again, I really like this combo with Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving now. This team, 3 games away from the finals last year. I don't think they got worse. I think they got a little bit better. Again, at the end of the day, it's still a Cavs-Celtics Eastern Conference Finals. I hate to get ahead of myself here, but I'd like to see anyone who thinks different. Teddy, I'll throw your Wizards in there at the number 3 spot. I like them competitively as well. But besides those 3 teams in the East, I don't see anything changing or anything getting less or more competitive.
Now, all this manipulation of the players definitely didn't, like you said, increase or decrease the depth of the East. I'm actually going to go against you. I actually think the Cavs got marginally better after this trade. I think with Isaiah Thomas now joining the Cavaliers, the difference between Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving is I think that Isaiah Thomas, while he is a very good scorer, has a better pass mentality than Kyrie Irving. We know Kyrie Irving has the ability to drive in any lane against anybody, and he can finish. He's one of the best finishers in the game. But with the Celtics gaining Irving, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, and Marcus Morris, if they did not get Irving and Isaiah Thomas happened to stay on that team, that would have been an incredible upgrade for the Celtics. Now, losing, not really losing, you're gaining Kyrie Irving back, but trading Isaiah Thomas to the Cavaliers kind of gives what LeBron James wants. He now has a point guard like he had when he was on the Heat with Mario Chalmers, when he had Dwayne Wade. They have point guards who are pass first. They know when to hit LeBron, which is always, but they know that they can give him the ball and LeBron can do what he wants with it. People like Kyrie were getting a little frustrated about ball share time because Kyrie's another player that likes to drive and shoot. He doesn't like to share the ball as much. I think that both the Celtics got A, the better player for the team, and B, the better overall team upgrade out of this trade.
I think we can agree on, and tell me if you disagree, that Kyrie Irving is the better player of the two. So when you look at the basics of the trade, that they're going to, Cleveland gets rid of him, and that's the only player they get rid of, but they get a lot more back in terms of the number of players they get back. That makes sense to me. I guess what I'm interested in here is the dynamic between Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, two what will be new faces for the Boston Celtics. And for Cleveland's perspective, Isaiah Thomas is not substantially worse than Kyrie Irving. So if it's going to help LeBron and the team continue to roll, I think it could work. I think you get a good piece in Crowder, but at the end of the day, that's not going to be a difference maker. And the draft pick for the Nets, that could very well become a top lottery pick again. But is that draft pick going to be a difference maker on whether LeBron chooses to stay or go? So I think for the time being, I side with Amit that I think that the Celtics got a little bit better return just because I see more offensive potential for the Celtics now with Hayward and Irving, and that was such a defensive team. And you get rid of Bradley, and Isaiah Thomas never really played defense, so you get rid of him. Kyrie, and he doesn't play defense. But I think you're looking towards Brad Stevens saying, you know what, maybe we could do a little bit more offensively now. So in that case, I like it for the Celtics, but obviously you still need a little bit of time to process it. My next question is, does this change at all your perception of who that top team in the East is?
No, I mean, I don't think it, like both of Med and I said, it doesn't really change the depth. You're still going to have the Wizards, the Cavs, and the Celtics. Those are the top three teams, I don't think particularly in that order. But all that really changed is it gave both teams more firepower. It gave Cleveland the ability to have LeBron play. It gave the Celtics the ability to have Irving and Gordon Hayward playing. Both of those teams, you're not going to be able to out-firepower the Cavs. It's just not going to be possible unless you're the Golden State Warriors. Besides that, there is no other team that can contest with their firepower. So you get a team that doesn't really increase on defense, that's just going to try to outshoot them, and that's not going to work. I think, if anything, I think it actually gives the Wizards more of a chance to reach maybe the number one seed this year for the sake that both teams...
That's a bold prediction.
Yeah, for the sake that both teams kind of now have to recuperate and play with two very big changes. I don't think if the Wizards and the Celtics meet and the Wizards and the Cavs meet, I actually don't think the Wizards are the better team, but I do think the Wizards might have potential with both teams slowing down a little bit that they could slip in and take the number one spot.
I think that's the biggest thing out of everything. It's as long, I know we're all saying that, you know, Celtics, Cavs, still going to be 1 and 2, but people are forgetting these are two completely different teams now. So let's, you know, let's hold off on the competitiveness or the rivalry or whatever this is becoming or it's going to be, because these are still two very different teams. It's easy to pick these teams on paper, but anything could happen next year.
And the Celtics lose three pretty good role players defensively in Avery Bradley and Kelly Olynyk and Jay Crowder. So that's going to affect what they have defensively.
And Amir Johnson.
Exactly, Amir Johnson. So they are going to have much more of an offensive roster, and the Wizards are known for their offensive roster. The Wizards have not been good at defense at all. And now Cleveland brings in Isaiah Thomas, who is a terrible defender, but he can score. And, you know, LeBron's going to do his thing defensively, but the Cavs were never known for their defense as well. So I don't know if this balances things out a little bit between those teams. Would you still consider Toronto below all three of those and any other team in the East?
Yeah, Toronto's definitely, I think, the four in that division. I don't see any other team competing with them. I think looking at it as a big picture here, I don't think Toronto can even compare to either the Wizards, the Celtics, or the Cavs. I think it's actually harder for them to fight because on paper, you're looking at Kyrie for Isaiah, like we've talked about before. Them switching is not really going to change the overall skill level of the team. It's going to test the camaraderie of the team. The Cavaliers are staying. Besides that, and what we can hope, their starting four, besides Kyrie, is going to be still there. The Celtics have cleaned house. They're going to have Gordon Hayward taking a new spot, Marcus Morris taking a new spot. They're going to have the more fixer-upper to do. So I think it's going to be them three and then Toronto. I think the rest of the division's getting a little more exciting with draft picks and such. But besides that, what people are looking for, the finals, you're not going to see anything new.
It's The Cage here on 91.3 WVUD. We are talking about the Kyrie Irving trade with Isaiah Thomas. Thomas going to Cleveland, Irving going to Boston, among other pieces there. Amit, I want to go back to something you've said recent times. Seemingly, you've said it a number of times that you want to see somebody like J.R. Smith come out of that starting lineup and maybe take a role to the bench. What does this mean for the makeup for Cleveland, and do you still think they have what it takes offensively in that top starting five, not only to maybe win the East, but we're looking up to Golden State?
Well, I said this in the podcast Tuesday night. I like the move for the Cavs really for one reason, and that's because their bench gets a little bit better, not that much better. I think people are forgetting the key player for the Cavs, and this player might kind of dictate the success for the Cavs, and it's Derrick Rose. Well, he's most likely going to come off the bench now. If Derrick Rose can have a 2009, 10, 11, 12 season like he did with the Bulls, then he's going to have the Cavs are going to have a lot of success. So that's really that one player that people often forget about. He's going to come off the bench. He still had 18 points per game last year for the Knicks. I don't really count that. It's just because they're the Knicks. So there's no analysis there. That I just don't count that. But he can still ball. He can still get up. Still a very athletic player. I know his knees aren't really there. But if he can help LeBron in any way, shape, or form, I don't expect the MVP Rose to come out. But the MVP, the close to the MVP Rose, if that guy comes out, this team can go very far. And this team could even challenge the Warriors in the finals, because I think a lot of us are already expecting a four-peat now.
I mean, there's a lot looking at Derrick Rose coming off the bench, but it's not something Cleveland has not done before. They had Deron Williams coming off the bench last year. Both Williams and Rose were very good for a time. Like, Williams was a scary person to come up against. And same thing with Derrick Rose. Now they're kind of on their bounce back coming off the bench. Deron Williams didn't do much. I mean, he didn't do much in the finals.
He didn't do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, the only the games that he scored in, Cleveland won. The games where he didn't score, Cleveland lost. Yeah. So maybe if we're looking at it on paper, maybe he did do something. But looking at it in the big picture here, you're not – Derrick Rose, I don't think, is going to be a factor, just like Deron Williams was in the finals. I think, like you said, if we get that MVP Derrick Rose and he finds his way into the starting lineup, I don't know where he'd fit, but if he finds his way into the starting lineup, then that's probably going to be a scary thing. But what I'm just trying to wrap my head around for this trade, and if anyone has any input here, the Celtics gave away their poster child, their two-time All-Star poster child who single-handedly got them to where they were last season. They traded away one of the better two-way players in the NBA in Jay Crowder. I mean, I don't think the Celtics had a two-way player since maybe a Pierce, a Garnett, a Rondo, maybe even an Allen. They traded away a 6'11 prospect who's played overseas. And then they traded away a draft pick, which what we know about draft picks, especially picks that have come from the Nets, they've been gems. The Celtics gave away a lot just to get Kyrie Irving, not to take away from what Kyrie Irving's done, but he's a four-time All-Star, and he was loud enough to say, I want to leave the best player in the NBA. I don't want to play next to the best player in the NBA anymore. I don't see the raw off-court side of this trade. I don't know why these front offices and what Danny Ainge were thinking to make this trade go through. Basketball-wise, it makes sense. We've talked about it a lot. We talked about where they're going to end up and how it's going to work. But off-court, I just don't see the purpose of it.
Well, we think back to the apparent rift between LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. And when Kyrie Irving asked for a trade, was there really, and I'm saying this rhetorically, but feel free to answer as well, was there really any way for him to not be traded and that relationship to be repaired? Was there a way? I didn't see it.
Short answer, no.
Yeah, short answer, no. Maybe you get into that.
Yeah.
So Cleveland looked for options, and were there other options? Maybe there were other options, but this is what they saw, and I'm not even going to get into the whole trading him to a rival. But Kyrie Irving decided himself that he wanted to become the focal point of a different offense, and now he is.
I don't think he's the focal point of the Celtics offense. They spent huge money for Gordon Hayward, so hyped
up.
Well,
he's the point guard.
If you're looking focal point for an offense, especially for the Celtics, it's not Kyrie Irving. And I think he understands that. Because if you looked at the teams he wanted to go to, the next best thing was the Spurs. You're going to say you're the focal point with Kawhi Leonard next to you? You're going to go to the Timberwolves. You're going to say the focal point with Jimmy Butler on that team? He's aiming for teams that he wants to be a contender. And I get that he doesn't want to be outshadowed by LeBron. He wants to go to a contending team. But for him, it's like, I want to be the focal point and then pick those teams. Kind of just sounds like, I don't want to play with LeBron anymore. Get me out of here.
You guys both make good points, but I got to side with Teddy just a little bit on this one.
God, I'm getting ganged up on over here. What is it, third time so far?
Look, here's the thing. He was a focal point in Utah, Gordon Hayward was. He was the guy. But there was many times where he was the second best player on that team, and Rudy Gobert, who was my pick for Defensive Player of the Year, kind of carried that team for times. And I mean, we saw Gordon Hayward struggle without Rudy Gobert against the Clippers in the playoffs. So as good as I think Gordon Hayward is, and he was my sleeper pick for MVP before Kyrie Irving joined that team. But as good as I think Gordon Hayward is, I think he's okay with kind of taking, whether it's a backseat or whether it's kind of like a LeBron, let me start facilitating, I don't need the ball in my hands like Kyrie Irving or like Isaiah Thomas. So I think he's not going to really change his game. I think the transition is going to be easy. I think he's already with his old Butler head coach. I don't think a lot changes here for Gordon Hayward. I think a lot changes for Kyrie Irving, but I think they'll both adapt perfectly fine. And I think, like Rudy Gobert kind of took over, I think Kyrie Irving will do that. I think you'll see that a lot of times where it's, you know, maybe like a Durant and Westbrook in OKC, like it's my turn to take over, it's your turn to take over. But if you want to say Kyrie Irving's a focal point of this team, I have no problem with that statement at all.
There's hardly any players in the NBA, and you can probably count them on one hand or two hands, that would be better at the one-on-one game than Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Hayward is nowhere near Kyrie in terms of one-on-one, what he can do with the ball in his hand. Isaiah Thomas is good with it, but Irving is on a whole other level than that. So if you bring Irving in and he says, I want to be the focal point, I want to get out of LeBron's shadow, because Kyrie Irving was great when he could do that ISO one-on-one stuff, but LeBron was way better because LeBron's the best in the NBA at that, and LeBron is the best in the world at that. So Kyrie says, I want to do that more often. And I can see more of Kyrie kind of dominating a game. And what is that going to do? This is where the two-way, the mutual situation comes in, because Kyrie starts putting some buckets in and scoring. What's that going to open up? More for Hayward. So I think it makes sense, and I think Kyrie is going to facilitate more for Hayward because he's not going to feel obligated to do more things one-on-one where he says, you know what, LeBron, get out of here. It's my turn. He is the point guard now. Gordon Hayward is not going to bring the ball up the court every time like LeBron would do, because LeBron, at the end of the day, could play all five positions on the team.
And the point that you made about there's nobody else one-to-one like Kyrie Irving counted on your hand, and I started thinking, like, who else we can put in that category? And what I came up with is the top five, top six, they're all Eastern Conference point guards. I mean,
well, they don't even have to be a point guard.
Anyone, like, pure one-on-one potential. Most of the picks are in the East. Like, you have now Kyrie Irving, definitely one player that you can't go one-on-one with. You have LeBron James, definitely can't go one-on-one with him. You have Giannis on the Bucks, you can't go one-on-one with him. You have John Wall, who's one of the craftiest players in the NBA, can't go one-on-one with him. Kemba Walker, known for probably the best ball-handling skills in college, transferring it to the NBA. Cardiac Kemba, by the way, shout out to him. My favorite play of all time in college basketball. But there's no...
You cannot put Kemba Walker in the same discussion with the John Walls and the Kyrie Irving.
I'm not saying it's going to go like John Wall 1, Kemba Walker 2, Kyrie 3. But Kemba Walker's another player that is very hard to go one-on-one to with containing. Like you said, just counting on your hands. I'm just thinking of it. So back to the overall point that Gordon Hayward and is not like the LeBron James that Kyrie Irving had before. I'm going to throw the bone in there that he can be, and we kind of saw that in the playoffs with when it wound down to it, it was a lot of the Gordon Hayward show. I don't think he's as talented nearly as LeBron in playing off positions, nearly as Kevin Durant in playing off positions, or Kawhi Leonard, but he's definitely not somebody just to say, all right, he's just going to play his position. He is an all-star, a superstar for a reason. He can play any position that the team needs him to play.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I just don't view Gordon Hayward as this, like, team savior, like, superstar that other teams have. He goes in and he's a supporting piece and a really, really good supporting piece. But you bring Kyrie Irving over. That's a four-time All-Star who has experience playing with LeBron, experience playing in the NBA Finals, experience matching up against Curry and Durant and all of this. And Hayward is nowhere near that in terms of resume and credentials. So what I look at now is I think it's going to be a good pair. And whether there's moments that Hayward takes over and moments that Irving takes over, that's okay. But I think that awkward dynamic between Kyrie and LeBron is going to be lost. And I think this benefits Hayward because you're going to have such a dynamic player who's going to open up a lot more opportunities for you.
And I think that's kind of the end of the line here. I think both teams got a better fit for their team, like I was talking about. Now Isaiah Thomas is with a team where he can throw the ball out, and he knows it's either landing in LeBron's hands, Kevin Love's hands, J.R. Smith's hands. He knows, I can't believe I just put J.R. Smith in that category, but I'm just going to run with it. He has players he can pass to. Kyrie Irving now has a less ball-demanding team where he can do his thing. I think both teams, again, on the basketball side of things, got what they wanted. The off-court side, we'll see how it ends up, if there's any bad blood, because the first game of both of their NBA seasons is against each other. Like, the Cavaliers play the Celtics to start both of their seasons. That's probably going to be one of the most exciting games of the year, if I'm just coming out saying it now after this trade. So after that game, we'll see if there's any pushing and shoving, but I don't know. I don't think there's much else to say about this trade other than the basketball side makes sense, the off-court side still a little fuzzy. Welcome back to 91.3 WVUD, Blue Hen Sports Cage here, kicking it off with the Cage Rage, and I'm going to take it right back to what we started in the beginning of the show, talking about Isaiah Thomas and his trade. There have been a little bit of some rowdy Celtics fans. They decided to, like they did with LeBron, like they did with Durant, they burned Isaiah Thomas's jersey as a response to him getting traded. LeBron James took to Twitter in a harsh defense of Isaiah Thomas, and he said, paraphrasing, why are you doing this? One, he got traded, he didn't choose to quit. Two, he was the reason your team made the playoffs. He put the team on his back. He put basketball in his sights. After he had a tragic death of his sister, he worked as hard as he possibly can to make the city of Boston proud, and in turn, the fans are burning his jerseys. It's not like a Kevin Durant situation where he chose to leave. Not like a Gordon Hayward where he chose to leave. He got traded. Isaiah Thomas did not decide that he wants to leave this team and start his own path. It is crazy that fans are just, right when they leave the team, they're like, all right, I hate him, get out of here. Same with LeBron. He did so much for an organization. How can you do that to a player that just does so much and works so hard and did everything to get your team where it is? I don't get it. It's hopefully going to die down soon for Isaiah Thomas' sake, but all that's in Thomas's mind right now is getting back on the court, working as hard as he can to make this season something new and something better.
Pittsburgh Steelers running back Le'Veon Bell, who has been holding out this entire preseason, put a tweet out the other day on Twitter. That's what you do with tweets. And he put 9-1-17 with a little emoji implying that he's going to end his holdout and come back to Steelers camp on the 1st of September, which would be right after the Steelers have their final preseason game and a few days before they open up their regular season. Le'Veon Bell has been holding out, as most players hold out for, because they believe that they have not been suited their contract with what they deserve. And he wanted a long-term contract near what Devontae Freeman or what other running backs have gotten, and he didn't get it. what he needs to understand, and what a lot of people have pointed out to him, is that the reason that he's gotten into this, there's been this hesitation of giving him a long-term contract, is because he's had too many off-the-field problems. He's had problems, he's had injuries, and the injuries are not something that you would typically use as a question mark for giving somebody a contract. You would, but not as much as the off-the-field problems. And for Le'Veon Bell to hesitate, wait, and then go on Twitter to say, I'll be back at this point, and then follow it up with a tweet that says, you're welcome. It seems very petty to me, and it seems like somebody who kind of needs to remember at this point that without him on the team, the Steelers are much worse, and you've got a potential to become the second best team in the AFC this year, or if you already are that. You need to be on the field, and you need to get over what has happened and understand that you may be part of the cause of the fact that you haven't gotten this contract. So shut up, get on the field, and start playing, and stay out of the off-the-field problems. Okay, we're going to take a look at a big fight coming up on Saturday from Las Vegas, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. And we could sit here and we could do the same old, you know what, look at Mayweather. He's a tough guy, hasn't lost, you know, powerhouse, older guy, McGregor coming over, making the transition, UFC, boxing. We'll put that all on hold for a second because you found a pretty interesting article that talks about the health effects or the possible health repercussions of this fight.
Right. So New York Times published an article about 2.5 hours ago titled, Is McGregor Safe Fighting Mayweather? Ringside Physicians Say No. And I was skimming through the article, and as I was reading, kind of the ideas popped in my head, like, I haven't thought about it this way. So if you look at how McGregor boxes, his main weapons in this fight are his kick and his elbow. He gets close, he kicks, he elbows, and then boom, he can land a shot. You can't do that when in this rule set when you're fighting against Mayweather. You can't kick, you can't elbow. It's almost muscle memory when you watch McGregor fight where he goes in for kicks and elbows. It's fluid, it's clean. That's what makes him one of the best fighters. If he gets into the ring and his muscle memory goes and tries to land a kick or tries to throw an elbow, Mayweather is probably one of the fastest fighters we're ever going to see. He's going to sit McGregor down, A, because you can't do that. So even if he lands it, there'll be repercussions. But B, you're opening your body up. When you go to elbow, you open up the total opposite side of your body. If you go to kick, you open that, the side of the body that you're kicking with. It's going to be very scary if McGregor muscle memories for an elbow and Mayweather's ready there for his punch. It is going to be medically scary if something like that happens in the ring.
Is that legal?
For an elbow or a kick? Or
a kick.
It's not in the, I don't believe it's in the sense that McGregor does it. I think in a more sparring way that McGregor does it, I think that's more of his side of the rule book. I don't think that you can combat kick. I could be wrong.
So you're saying you can defensively kick?
I think you can defensively push away. I think, like, if you're coming at me, I can stick my foot out as almost a defensive create space kind of foot.
But that wouldn't even be an aggressive, like, right, lurch of the foot.
It's not an aggressive. It's kind of getting space to reset. I mean, I can do some more digging there.
I feel like I need to stand up in studio here and kind of experiment with how that would work. But if the... Okay, so you're saying if the aggressor kicks, that you can't do that in boxing. Boxing is punching.
Right. Boxing, so MMA rules are not allowed during this fight with the shift over to Mayweather's rule book. So, right, so no kicking, no elbowing, that's generic. Let's see, as we're scrolling through... Yep, it says there is no way that McGregor is allowed to elbow or kick. Now, I would have to dig into the... Because I know when you watch Mayweather highlights, his feet are still used as kind of a sparring tool. I don't think you can combat kick. I think that's the difference. I don't think you're kicking for damage. I think you're kicking for defense, which is also why I think McGregor has the upper hand here. I think the fans are going McGregor. I think the analysts are going Mayweather. I think that it's... Mayweather's wheelhouse, when you watch the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, I don't know if you watched that live, it was Pacquiao stepping into McGregor, Pacquiao stepping into Mayweather, Mayweather backing up, dancing around, playing defensive. And then when he can quickly get a shot, and he does, and that adds up, and that takes him in his toll. So I think, personally, I think it's Mayweather's fight to lose, but it is also important to note that there are a lot of articles coming out on why Conor McGregor is going to win, why Conor McGregor is going to be the best one here, why the fight's already over that Conor McGregor already won. And this one coming out from USA Today is like, it's already over, McGregor already won, because McGregor has more to lose. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know. I'll throw that one to you. Do you agree that that McGregor has more to lose here?
No, I think that's just overanalyzing and reshuffling the same arguments, because it's very clear that the one who has more to lose is Floyd Mayweather, because he hasn't lost. So that doesn't make any sense. Of course he's the one who has more to lose, because he hasn't lost. So McGregor, okay, sure, he hasn't boxed yet, but most people would say that he's the underdog, and an underdog. So then you're doing reverse psychology here and saying, oh, well, he has more to lose because he's the underdog. That's not really true.
They quoted it as that McGregor works with a different mentality, and he's more focused on what can be possible, and he doesn't really worry about, I guess, what the perfect record being tarnished, but he was so loud-mouthed and so cocky about this fight that he has more to lose to defend it.
Teddy Gelman here, representing WVUD Sports. Football season is quickly approaching, and WVUD is your home for the most up-to-date analysis of Delaware Blue Hens football. Our 2017 season coverage gets underway on Thursday, August 31st, with a special broadcast of Blue Hens Sports Cage live outside Trabant University Center. Jake Lampert and I run the cage from 5 to 7, and then Brandon Holvek and Amid Quadri have the call for the season opener against Delaware State. Once again, that is Thursday, August 31st, for a Blue Hen Sports Cage special outside Trabant, and then it's football. WVUD is your home for Delaware football, field hockey, and ice hockey this fall. Check us out at WVUD.org on the Sports tab and on Twitter at WVUD Sports.
Daly now matched up on the big man, tries the three. Daly shot is good! Ryan Daly drains the three!
Daly can drop 20 and 10 on any given day.
What is his ceiling? What do we project from him? How high can this guy get?
Best player in the CAA. He's a scorer. He can rebound. He plays with hustle. He's a strong defender.
I was like, hey, Brandon, do you think he'd get to the NBA? And Brandon was like, only if he's best player in the CAA.
Just to think that a couple months ago, this was a freshman who may knock down a few shots.
Catch Blue Hen Sports Cage for the latest in Delaware athletics. Thursdays 5 to 7 on 91.3 WVUD.